over 33 years, CIUT-FM has delivered the sound and the news of your city. We could not have done this without you. CIUT 89.5 is still here during these pandemic times, but we do need your financial support. Please show your support by donating now. Love your radio and visit CIUT.FM to help keep us strong and healthy. Thank you in advance from all of our volunteers and staff. CIUT 89.5, Toronto.
Welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, and I want to remind you, coming up, June 15 is the beginning of our fundraising drive at CIUT, and this year is special because of all the strange difficulties we've had to cope with and keep the station going, the coronavirus and the disruption everybody's lives, but CIUT has continued to chug along very impressively, I think, and I hope everybody appreciates that. I hope we're going to get many donations, and you can always be preemptive. You can start now. You can go to CIUT.FM and make a donation, and it will ask you when you do so what program you support, and go ahead and say the Taylor Report. But there's a lot of great programs, and I encourage you to support the station. Today, I guess we have to stay on the same themes. We have to talk about this matter that is unfolding. I call it a cultural revolution, what's going on actually around the world, beginning with the decision by a typical, I would say, North American police officer to show a kind of zealousness in the putting pressure on, destroying, acting against black Americans, knowing and believing he will get away with it. And but that the moment seems to be a powerful one. And it's like what's going on, I think I used the word already, cultural revolution. Everyone saw it, and they don't need somebody to explain it to them. It was clear, and we need to have this process of the Cultural Revolution to continue. I like the fact that many people are using the word. We pointed out it was very helpful in American political life that Bernie Sanders, we can call him Bernie Burnout, I guess, but listen, he did say we need a new American Revolution. He meant class, he meant race, he meant new attitude. What we're seeing is a deeply divided American society, primarily on class lines, and of course falling most heavily on those who had their land stolen from them, indigenous American, and those who were enslaved, brought to America, slaves who have had always the assumption on the part of the white ruling class of America, the notion that they were not real Americans, although they are certainly in terms of the arrival of the Europeans, the African Americans arrived with them and were brought. And it's taken a long time, and it isn't over by a long shot, but the struggle for equality, America hung itself on its own petard. It said, we hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal, ha ha ha. But the problem is they put dynamite under their own feet when they said that. Just as what did he say, 420 years ago, Abraham Lincoln said, we have to have government of the people, by the people, and for the people. When he said that, I think I've pointed this out before on the Taylor Report, when he said that, he was using the language, political language, of the most advanced political people in North America, the abolitionists. The phrase which came from Wendell Phillips, I believe, who had said that in a meeting, and Abraham Lincoln had heard it. I think I've said this story before. I like repeating a good story, particularly a good point, that phrase, of the people, by the people, for the people, has power. It can be uttered by anyone, and should be. It should be uttered by everyone. I was glad when Tulsi Gabbard used it, pointing out that the oligarchs run America, and they are on top of being a practicing class and racial oppression. They, of course, practice international intervention. They call it humanitarian intervention. The British, whenever the colonialists called it an expeditionary force. But they have the idea that they should dominate everybody. Wasn't that great? Donald Trump said we should dominate. I love the fact that they have this idiot who kind of lets, every time he opens his mouth, he lets the cat out of the bag about how, what the realities are. He said we have to dominate. So I would say that it's theme we want to strike in the Taylor Report, and you know, we're in this phase of our programming where we are, that's what we're doing, we're reporting, we're talking about the big stories and breaking them down to the extent we can, and trying to establish their significance and pick out the ones that seem to be lies, misrepresentations. That's a function of a healthy program that follows world affairs, may sort them out. One of the ideas I get from the Floyd George story is that a chokehold was used, and domestically, that's the technique for dealing with elements of society that rulers want kept under strict control. And so this led to militarization of the police forces. Police force really shouldn't be acting as they do now in North America, certainly in Canada, in the United States, as quasi-military. The more and more they have weapons that they shouldn't have, they're firing tear gas, and which is banned in warfare, oddly enough, remarkably enough. This is a pretty terrible situation when you have that kind of thing, when it's permitted. And extra violence, our police are more and more covered with helmets and masks and gear on their, I don't know how they sometimes walk down the street. They always kind of swagger, partly just to be able to walk with all the weapons that they're carrying. And it's this policy of brute force, being there quickly and to, as Trump tells them, dominate people, bully people, shout at people, which of course always adds to tension and adds to violence, that kind of conduct. That isn't really a function of police within anything resembling a democracy. But going back to the word chokehold, I saw Al Sharpton talking. By the way, Sharpton's behavior has been outstanding in my opinion. His talks are little seminars. I urge everybody just to listen to his words. But he pointed out that Mr. Garner was put in a chokehold in New York. His crime, which turned out to be a false allegation, was that he'd been selling loose cigarettes. What a crime. Anyhow, a little muscle-bound cop grabbed him and held him until he killed him. And his words were, "I can't breathe." Now it's happened again. That's that little extra mile that the authorities think they have to go. And it has, I'm going to say, it has an analogy. And that is that American sanctions on people they brutalize all over the world, people all over the world watching from Iraq, watching from Libya, watching from Vietnam, watching from Syria, Yemen, they've seen all this, and they say, welcome to the world we share. This is what we get. Special forces kicking our doors, beat up on civilians, burn buildings down, kill people arbitrarily. But there's another thing that occurs to me, and that is that the U.S. is practicing sanctions on people. It puts sanctions, which are not legal, on the country of Venezuela, on Cuba, since 1961. I think it was Jack Kennedy who really upped the ante. Perhaps it was actually Eisenhower. Anyway, between them, they did it. Democrat Republican Party, I said last week, I'll say again, they are the ones who have created this situation where someone has his throat pressed and he can't breathe. They've tolerated it. It's been there all along. But they're the ones also, they agree to be an imperial force, to call themselves a policeman, and to go around the world. Not only intervening, but using this thing called sanctions, which sanctions is taking away the ability to breathe of countries. You're not going to let them have food. You're not going to let them have access to medicine. I know they say, oh yeah, we do allow that. No, they don't actually, because once you put sanctions on a country, a third party will not then want to move forward. If he's doing heavy business with you, he's not going to want to move forward if he knows you have sanctions on Cuba, Venezuela, Syria, Islamic Republic. He knows Zimbabwe. They will help you strangle, because what is a sanction but a form of siege to deny people the ability to deny states the ability to trade, the ability to get the capital they need to get to from a bank in Europe. They can't do that because sanctions have been applied. And what's the purpose? The purpose of the sanction is to hurt the people so that they will then remove the government. That's actually what it is. So the chokehold on Floyd George is the sanction on Venezuela and Syria, and Canada is right in there with them, running alongside. Small country watching its big friend molest somebody. It's kind of like the hyena. Is it the hyena who runs with the lion? Might be the jackal. I've seen them both and I couldn't tell you which one does it. The lion does the killing, and then the other guy, then the other animal comes and chews on the bones, gets a little extra there. That's what's going on. Of course, the number one partner is not Canada's. The number one partner is the United Kingdom. U.S. and U.K. have been nasty partners for a long time. But it has to be emphasized that this little extra behavior that's required so that they can go on being the masters, that kind of brutal stuff, it has a political equivalent in foreign policy. And it's very important to say this now, because the challenger to Trump, Joe Biden, the Democratic Party, they want to step it up against the China and Russia. At the moment, they've got a hate on for China, and this is something we should completely reject. Now, by the way, before moving from the subject of chokeholds, it's very important, I think. I haven't seen the authorities here say it loud and clear, but I want them to do it. I think we should force them to do it. Force them to say what the mayor of Minneapolis and the police chief of Minneapolis, in light of this protest, starting in Minneapolis, spreading across the United States, and also around the world, which of course identifies racism, racial profiling, brutality against Black Americans. That is all important. But they come back to a point. They've got to say, and immediately, what the mayor of Minneapolis said he's going to do immediately, that he is going to ban the use of chokeholds by police, and they're going to require officers to report and intervene if excessive force is being used by another officer. But don't hold your, pardon the bad choice of a term, but don't hold your breath till you get one policeman reporting on another, because they're a gang and of course they protect each other. But saying it's banned is important. And I'm not comfortable with the kind of play this press is giving this by saying, well, of course, in many jurisdictions they don't do that. I'm sorry, they do it in all of them. They do it in all of them. And so you need, instead of running and hiding behind this phrase, or, oh, it says in the guidebook here, you're not to do that. No. We want leaders. These guys who say, well, you know, I hear you, and I'm on, and like in Trudeau's case, I'm on one knee for you. Oh, yeah, great, thank you. No, let's take the microphone, tell the public, in front of everybody, we are banning that conduct. And anybody sees that conduct, calls it out, and you fire the individual. Fire him, her, do it, and tell him, this will not happen. You're not going to do it anymore. And as for the other points, yes, but people are saying, you're talking about reducing the police budgets. Well, obviously we've militarized them. We've allowed this, I guess the term is paramilitary thing, phenomenon to come into being. We should never have allowed it. I mean, they don't need tanks. They don't need quasi-bazookas. They don't need all that stuff. And you want to save money, every city? Get rid of it. Sell it. If you're Trudeau, sell it to your Saudi friends. You sell them that stuff anyway. You think it's funny, you go ahead and do it. You just sell it to them. I think that I'm going to say it would cause no harm. The Saudis can't fight their way out of a wet paper bag anyway. They run over each other with the damn stuff. So go ahead and give it to them. It's all crummy. It's all disgusting. All this claim that you, Western democracy, rule of law, you know, you peddle stuff to the absolute monarch of Saudi Arabia. So your foreign policy is your domestic policy. You don't actually believe any of those words. But the people are angry. There's a cultural revolution going on. I would say to those in the cultural revolution, tell them to cut the police budget in half. Mainly by just cutting all these, bring them all down to human size. Get rid of all that armament. But indefinitely fire anybody who uses special wrestling tricks that somebody taught them somewhere. Put a stop to that. Say do exactly what the mayor of Minneapolis has done. He has done it. He has said they are banning it. I want to see the mayor of Toronto's not say, oh, we don't allow it. No. Say you're banning it. It will not happen. If it happens, people are gone. And then probably ought to rethink all the business of SWAT teams and these characters, remember them from the G20, where they broke up and kettled people in Toronto. They kettled them. That was a new trick they had. A disgusting, humiliating thing. I think people were supposed to forget about it, but it happened in Toronto. By the way, they all this sentiment about the demonstrations in Hong Kong, which are none of nobody's business. In Toronto, the demonstration was broken up, kettled. It was told it, where it could go, when it could go, how long it could go, and it was that was all taken care of. That's all very important, in my opinion. And this is the Taylor Report, and it is CIUT, and I'm going to remind you again, yes, alternative radio is vital. So when June 15 rolls around, make sure that you become a supporter, help us on fundraising. And yes, you can go anytime you like to CIUT.fm and donate. I want to say something about the statues phenomena. I like this. I said cultural revolution. In Britain, in UK, in England, I never know what their real name is, but anyhow, in the center of the great Anglo Empire, now Anglo-American, but the great Anglo Empire, Five Eyes, the hometown of Five Eyes, the crowd turned out and saw a statue of Edward Colston, and he was a slave merchant who made a great fortune. And they have a statue because, you see, in England, Merry England, he was considered a philanthropist, because with his money made selling slaves, remember that 15 to 20% of those taken captive in Africa and shipped to slave masters in the Western Hemisphere, they didn't survive even the voyage. I don't know, I suppose he had an insurance policy for that, but at any rate, he made an immense fortune, Edward Colston. And despite the fact that he was nice, he built almshouses. How lucky. He built almshouses. So they pulled a statue down in Bristol. They rolled it down the street. Go on the internet, you can watch. They rolled it down the street and dumped it in the river. Bless their hearts. I think that's a great gesture. I know that already the high-ranking, some people who in the Tory government of in London are saying it was awful. But you see, this is a people action. It's called Cultural Revolution. It happens in history. It happens a lot. Because the people live their lives, and the masters lead their lives. And once in a while, the gate is open, and the lights come on, and the people have a little festival. So that's what they're doing. And Edward Colston, we should know about him. Edward Colston was set up under the Royal African Company. The Royal African Company had the contract to get into the slave trade. And a matter of fact, the British went to war twice with the Dutch in order to corner some part of the slave trade. Edward Colston was one of the beneficiaries. It was the royals themselves, after their restoration, after the Cromwellian Revolution, which had put Parliament in power, the Parliamentary Revolution, where Parliament defeated Charles I under Cromwell. They defeated, chopped his head off, remember? He was played by Richard Harris. You want to see a great movie, watch Richard Harris knocking off the head of Alec Guinness. Was it Alec Guinness? The two of them were beautiful. A very, very instructive film, actually. I think it's just pretty easy to remember. I think it was titled Cromwell. So the Cromwell Revolution had a lot of egalitarian features in it, and it put a crimp in the style of the royals. But when the sons of Charles I were brought back, Charles II became king, 1680s, roughly. Anyhow, they formed the Royal African Company to engage in the slave trade. And when I say they, he and his brother, James, who later became James II, both of them, one became king, but they formed the Royal African Company, and good old Edward Colston was in there. Yes, and by the way, it is embarrassing. John Locke, father of liberalism, owned stock in that. I've been reading recently the apologetics for him, and I'm not convinced. He really looks like an opportunist. He's got a lot of Bill Clinton in him when I look at him closely. Some might say maybe Jefferson, but anyway, he's father of liberalism. But yes, it was the Royal African Company, and they're the ones who, for the English-speaking world, ran the slaves. And if you were in Virginia and you were helping them establish British rule, and you had purchased slaves from the Royal African Company, you would be given the appropriate amount of acreage. They probably figured in their head, how much land can a slave work in order to make this guy fat and happy? And then they gave them that much land. So if you had 20 slaves, well, voila, you got yourself a plantation. And gratis, they gave you that. So I think it's a good idea to pull down Colston's statue. But I think they should pull up the veil and tell us who he was, talk about all this. I think it's wonderful. This is very instructive. Cultural revolution, more power to them. And in Virginia, and this is a cultural revolution, they're going to bring down the statue of Robert E. Lee in Richmond, Virginia. It's 2020. 2020, Robert E. Lee was the Confederacy, that is, the slave owners' army. He was the commander of the slave owners' army, slave owner himself. And he was defeated. The Union was preserved and slavery was abolished, 1865. 2020, because of the murder of Floyd George and the mood and spirit of enough, enough is enough. Stop it. Stop the lies, etc. Because of that, the people of Virginia and the people of Richmond, I take it, are going to finally remove the statue of a man who fought to maintain slavery and is always considered a fine gentleman. Everybody likes the way he looked on a horse, although I don't know anybody actually. No pictures of him that are real that I know of, but he on a statue he looks like he belongs on a horse. This is the reality, but good for Richmond. Let's move on to Richmond. I have an idea for you. I'm going to suggest you do something. Could you finally, after all these years, build a prominent statue of the President of the United States who declared the end of slavery, and of course build statues also to black soldiers who served in the Union Army? As a matter of fact, for the ones that did, I would suggest you do it all these things. It's not because I'm not satisfied that you just get rid of Robert E. Lee. There should be a statue of Abraham Lincoln. And there should be statues of those black soldiers who entered Richmond with Abraham Lincoln himself when he visited Richmond after it fell and was and the Confederacy was destroyed, one of the great moments never celebrated in American history, never celebrated, never talked about because of the hurt feelings of the Confederates. President Lincoln went to Richmond and he, we've talked about it on the Taylor Report. We have a very literate listenership. You guys all know this story, but I'm telling you something. It is not known outside our little circle here. That's why you got to support CIUT.FM. Not known that the man himself, Abraham Lincoln, said, I want to go to Richmond. And they said, well, you know, they're still fighting and everything. And he said, I want to get over there. I want to see, I want to walk into the capital of those characters. And so he did. Washington, not far from Richmond. So they arranged for him to go. And he went by I think it's the James River. And they were confused about his arrival time. So they didn't have a big crowd of, didn't have their soldiers standing at attention. They didn't have a band ready when he arrived. And he stepped out of the boat, then when they took him ashore, he had a small entourage with him, including his son. And he was met, this is a historical fact, he was met by freed slaves who had lived, who were in and around Richmond. The first crowd of people to come and see him, and of course, why wouldn't it be? What do you think, the white Confederates would be down there? No, they were by this time hiding out. They were laying low. So he gets out of the boat, and he's standing, waiting for the appropriate people to come take him. It's a bit of a security issue. He's in the former Confederate capital, just only vacated the day or two before. There's still firing going on. There's still a lot of smoke. And former slaves came over to him, and they said to each other and to others, who is that? And they said, that's Abraham Lincoln. And then they came over to him. Some of them were reaching out to touch him, etc., as people do, by the way, when any famous person is around. And he said, well, you're not slaves. Don't anybody act like a slave. He was as moved as they were. He then asked, can somebody tell me where Jefferson Davis's office is? I said, sure. And so he was led then by people started running from all directions to come, including Union soldiers. They took him to the office of Jefferson Davis. And everybody, he walked into the building, went upstairs. He said, where does Jefferson Davis sit? I said, this was his chair here. And Lincoln sat down in the chair and was looking around the room. And by that time, a high-ranking officer had arrived. And he said, we should have a proper toast here. And Lincoln said, just bring me a glass of water. And they brought him water. And then he asked them to give him a little tour. Okay, my point is, put up a statue of the arrival of the president of the country that had destroyed the Confederacy. And put up statues of the black soldiers who were, and I don't think it was any accident at all. I think that the Union Army knew what they were doing, and they were, I never met a military guy yet who wasn't half politician. They're always thinking how they want to look in the pictures and where they want to be standing and what they want to say. So there was a black regiment in Richmond, which was, again, a story Americans don't tell themselves. They have told a story. There's all kinds of marvelous stories that came out of that moment. The uncelebrated moment of arrival of the President of the United States who had made the decision in the middle of the war to emancipate the slaves and who had carried through on the promise. There's a lot of politics, and I know that there's many details, and people like to debate what they were thinking, what they were doing. They did it, and black Americans were recruited and armed and put into the battle. Just look at the movie Glory, which is, I'd say, two-thirds of a good movie. There's a lot of stupidity in it, but anyhow, it's two-thirds of a good story about the use of black troops. Karl Marx was living in London, and he said, when that war started, he said, slavery's dead. Slavery will not survive this war, because you cannot maintain slavery in a battle where, even if that isn't on the table, it's not going to end that way. 4 million black Americans at the end of that war joined the rest of America, and of course came the amendments, which amendments of citizenship, amendments of the civil rights were all promised and then taken away. Not immediately, but were taken away and had to be fought for again. Now they're fighting again now. But I tell you that this matter of taking down Lee has a next logical step. And the next logical step is a statue of the leader of the Union Army and the leader of the Union who issued the proclamation to emancipate slaves. And he's the guy who, in his speech at Gettysburg, said, government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish. That hasn't been lived up to. This is a problem that America has. It has never become a people's republic. It should become a people's republic. But you see, you hear that little echo? Oops, there are countries called people's republic. And the people's republic seem to be able to look after themselves. They're very important. And so Uncle Sam, he's shy. He doesn't want a people's republic. He wants a republic. And so it's become a republic of plutocrats, republic of money, and not even the old style republic, the kind that Robespierre wanted when they talked about the republic of virtue. You see, if you were a republican, that implied equality, and therefore people should live like equals. They shouldn't be putting on air, they shouldn't be showing off and all that. As the poet said, the Mexican poet said that nobody should have anything superfluous until everybody has what is necessary. Mr. Miron, I believe, M-I-R-O-N. So this leads, again, I have to bring this into the other, to this issue. In my mind, U.S. domestic policy is foreign policy. And if we're going to talk and recognize that knees should not be pressed against people's necks because of their color in America, neither should a U.S. send Navy and Air Force and Army and Marines and Special Forces all over the world to molest and repress people. And I'm looking at the Toronto Globe and Mail. I'm like this, working on a light bag when I do this. Saturday, June 5, there's a cartoon, and it really summarizes our problem and how, if we're going to save ourselves and become people's republics, governments that say in their name that we are here for the people. It shows Uncle Sam, and he's got his red and white pants on, and he's putting on his cartridge belt, and he's got his baton, billy club, as we used to call them. He's got his helmet, and he's taken off his top hat, and he's about to go and, of course, perform mob control. He's going to beat up on people. He's going to dominate them, I guess. And behind him is a little podium, and on it there's a red phone ringing. Red phone is ringing. And it says, under the phone it says, "Leader of the free world. Leader of the free world." And the voice, it's a voice message, and it says, "Sorry, we can't take your call right now." Oh, you see, that's a Joe Biden cartoon. Because, and it's a Colin Powell cartoon, and it's a Obama cartoon, and it's a George Bush Senior cartoon, and a George Bush Junior cartoon, and it's a Bill Clinton cartoon, because leader of the free world has to take that call. He's got to get out there. He's got to get busy. And that brings in Trudeau. And that brings in Boris. And that brings in the other eyes, the other three guys' eyes. Last week I told you we lost New Zealand. They're kind of blinking on and off. They haven't signed any Five Eyes statement for a while. They're all party to this. They all think that butting in the world is their, that's what they do. They're on call. The old Anglo American empire is 24-hour call, and freedom is not, is losing out in the world because we're not over there molesting people. At least that's the theory. Actually, in fact, they're molesting the hell out of people. Trump has got troops in Syria, but Biden wants them to get tougher. He's promising we could get tough on China. They're agreed to molest China. They just absolutely agreed to do it. This is a dangerous place to be. To be talking about, don't get so involved in domestic matters that you don't go and save the free world the way you did in Libya, where they now can sell black people on the street after Hillary and her friends committed political atrocity. Canada was there. Canadian military was so happy they actually got to drop a few bombs on people who couldn't fight back, which is always the way with imperialists. The people like to put their knees on you are cowards. If they're sure that you're helpless, they're gonna hurt you worse. But they have to know you're helpless before they do that. They're not really good at being in fair fights. And this brings us to the this Hong Kong story and the World Health Organization story. I want to make sure I touch two parts of it. The World Health Organization, Trump has been trying to get at them, and he's enlisted the support of the UK, of course, in Canada and others. Their job is to bark and snip, whatever little dogs do. Snap, I got it. So they started on the World Health Organization because they want to get at China, because China, the World Health Organization has been actually held its footing and has not accepted to be baited. They do what they do in the world, and they have the approval of the United Nations. There is something called the the group that is often referred to as the international community. There's the world community, which is in the United Nations and all the other states. All the states that make it up, Venezuela, Thailand, Cambodia, South Africa. That's the world. But the Globe and Mail, Toronto Star, think there's a thing called the international community. By that they mean Five Eyes or the Anglo-American Alliance. So they say the international community is concerned. And then you say, okay, well, I'm reading, so who? Canada, New Zealand, Australia. You say, yes, huh? No, the international community has not agreed to attack the World Health Organization. But that doesn't stop our media, who are doing a terrible job of misleading people and producing actually a kind of, in my belief, a wonderful illustration of false news, they call it. I hate that phrase. Matter of fact, I'll withdraw it. Just manipulative journalism. About 4 days ago, there was a story. It comes from the Associated Press, and it says that they ran a headline. And the headline said that there had been a the Chinese withhold data on coronavirus from World Health Organization, and it says recordings reveal complaints reveal complaints by officials at odds with the body's public praise of Beijing's response to outbreak. Now that's a story, and Associated Press said it, went with it. And, well, it actually turned out to be really kind of a crummy, cobbled together piece of junk. So it said recordings, so I'm interested, okay, what recordings? Is there a transcript? No. And they went on, based on what the Associated Press said, we have a transcript of a behind-the-scenes discussion by the World Health Organization officials. They named them, actually, a couple of them, these officials. And it really, it causes the story to have a real stink to it. I mean, this is a stinky story. It says they named an American doctor, Vankerhove, and they named Dr. Mike Ryan. You've seen Dr. Mike Ryan. He's usually sitting, actually, both of them are usually sitting alongside Dr. Tedros. I'm not going to attempt to say his name. I'm not very good at that pronunciation. But Dr. Tedros is there with them. So what the AP had this nice, lovely, dirty story. They say they have a tape recording of a conversation where all these people are present. And among the people quoted are Ryan and Verkel. And you say, well, but you see, the problem is, if you're a decent person, I consider myself decent, I want to know, well, wait a minute, that just seems to be just like five or six words there. You see, five or six words kind of hard to go on, particularly given your headline that says that the World Health Organization is really, truly, behind the scenes, are angry and frustrated, because they did find the word frustrated in the five or six words they quoted. They found the word frustrated. However, they thought, well, we'll play a nice dirty trick. This is a dirty trick. You're not allowed to do this in court, by the way. If you were actually bringing an accusation, you're not allowed to do this little trick. They say, they call up the spokesperson for the WHO, and they say, we have this tape, and in this tape, you say so-and-so, and we want your comment. Fortunately, the guys at WHO are a lot smarter than the Associated Press, and they also apparently know Associated Press is a kind of a rat that can't be trusted and also needs to be asked a simple question. So they asked the Associated Press, Verkhove and Ryan and others at the WHO, they said, can you show us that transcript or give us the tape so that we could make an intelligent reply or help you out, since you're just a decent imperialist journalist and you just want the facts. So since you are the one who claims you have a transcript, you're the one who claims you have a tape, could you show us that tape? Please? And you know what the Associated Press said? Oh, no. No, we can't do that. Why? Well, it might compromise our source. Really? How? If it's a tape, what does that do? Tape doesn't have a name on it, does it? No, this is Major League sleazeball journalism. Sleazeball, rotten. And the Globe puts it on the front page because, hey, listen, anything said about China today is fair game. You got mud there? Give me a bucket of it. I'm going to throw this mud. That's all the Associated Press did. It was a low, dirty trick to try to harm the World Health Organization. And as far as I'm concerned, a pursuit ought to begin. Come on, AP. You're the big journalist. What tape? Let's see the tape and let's see what everybody says. And just for the record, to be clear, all of us who really have some self-respect, let us say to each other and to them, hey, when the World Health Organization wants to tell you something, AP and American and CTV and all the Canadian people, journalists who picked it up and put it, spread it as far as they could spread this hunk of malarkey. When the World Health Organization wants to tell you something, they will tell you. If you were to sneak around and listen to press officers or people having meetings, and there's a room full of people, you can pretty much cook any story you want, because, you know, if somebody at the meeting said, hey guys, I don't agree with any of this stuff, then you could run your headline. But if they had a meeting and they come to a conclusion, which they did, World Health Organization has designated spokespersons, it has a position, it deserves a little respect. When they want to tell you something, they will tell you something. Now you, in Canada, you didn't like it that there was a Canadian doctor, Dr. Aylward, who said, I'm impressed with the fact that the Chinese had to, faced with COVID-19, decided that they had to identify those who had it. They had to trace those that they might have been in contact with. They had to isolate the victim of this, the ones who have it, and that they went about it in such a way that they broke the chain of transmission. He said that. That got him in trouble in Canada, because he said Chinese did something right. And we have been on a tear ever since in Ottawa, every place where the Five Eyes operate, to say, no, China bad. Anything, no, China bad. We have to pick a fight with China. And the Canadian people didn't agree, never have been consulted, whether we want to pick a fight. Actually, Canadian people weren't consulted about Meng Wanzhou. Donald Trump said he wanted Meng Wanzhou picked up. So they picked her up in Canada. Many Canadians said, why would we do that? When did anybody actually discuss any of this? And why are we now going to turn this into a pattern of extreme hostility and talk of intervention? Boris Johnson is upping the ante on this. But that's one of the things that has to be emphasized when we talk about racism. Racism is a very peculiar. Five Eyes are white and they speak English. And they are the British Empire with America, the addition of America. I blame Alexander Hamilton. He's the one who wanted to go with the British, and it worked out. He got his way. So what we have, people think the British Empire is gone. No, it's not gone. It's the Five Eyes of the British Empire with the Americans. It's just Americans are driving the process. That's what you get. You have a big, nasty son, and he takes over. That's what happened. But we should not agree to this. This actually, Five Eyes has got to give it up. And Canada has to join the world. And when they say international community, they have to mean those countries that didn't agree with them. So when we're talking about the World Health Organization, it's about 190-5. 190-5. You get the numbers? And by the way, now we want to start a fight over Hong Kong. Boris Johnson says he wants to give citizenships, he says, maybe, to 3 million people in Hong Kong. The British, because of the Opium Wars, the right to crush China and force them to accept opium, to have opium forced on the Chinese people, something that the British did, starting in the 1830s, they took over, and one of the victories they won was that the Smugglers Island of Hong Kong, owned by the William, what's his name, Jarmine, and the other fellow, they That was a smuggler's island. So they said, we want the smuggler's island to belong to us. William Jardine, pardon me. William Jardine and his pals. They fought for the right to push opium in China. And when they won their little battle, they took it. They smuggler's island became Hong Kong. So eventually China stood up. You've heard about that. They stood up and they said, okay. And the British said, okay, we give it back. All the time that the smugglers gang, the drug gang, were there, they never gave anybody democracy. Never. The governor, the former British governor, who's being quoted in the Globe and Mail these days, is talking about, oh, the, you know, they need their democratic rights in Hong Kong. He didn't give them that. He was the governor. He wasn't appointed by anybody in Hong Kong. He was appointed by the good old crown, you know, the guy who established slavery under British rule, the Africa Company. That's who was running Hong Kong. And all of a sudden, now they're thinking, oh, well, maybe we could weaponize these people one more time. Maybe we could play a dirty little trick and see if we could create the excuse to intervene illegally in the affairs of a sovereign country, China. One system, and I'm now speaking to also to Canadian Labour Congress, who got themselves involved. Canadian Labour Congress joined into this argument by saying, they're about the workers. The biggest union in Hong Kong supports the government of Hong Kong and the government of China on this issue. One nation, two systems. Nothing in what the Chinese government is saying does anything to the one nation, two systems. They're going to maintain the two systems. But security, boys and girls, belongs to China because it is their sovereign duty to protect their country. And that's what they're trying to do. And Boris, he wants to see if he can make trouble. And of course, Mr. Pompeo, he wants to make trouble. He says, well, based on this national security idea, that Hong Kong is no longer autonomous. Well, that wouldn't be in that. Here's what the world says. And I mean this. All the other countries of the world are not joining you, Mr. Pompeo. They're not joining you, Johnson. They're not joining you, Trudeau. You are a gang of five. Five of you. That's who, you're the gang. And you're not going to tell China. And you're not going to tell the rest of the world. The rest of the world not going to go, oh, South Africa is going to say, hey, Pompeo's got a great idea. Boris Johnson has got a great idea. We're with him. No, they're not going to do that. They're not going to do it. The rest of the world is on the other side. Take it to the United Nations, Canada. Take it to the United Nations, Boris, and see what happens to you. You will lose. And as for your dirty tactics, putting your knees on people and applying sanctions, you're going to lose that one too. This is the Taylor Report. And remember, coming up, the 15th is starting point for the your big opportunity to help us with fundraising, so go to donate. You can do it right now, preemptively. Do it right now. We'll be talking about it next week. But donate to CIUT.org.